Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, 1979 Pirates, time to reunite again. It's been 40 years since that team won Game 7 in Baltimore. It's the last Pirates team to win the World Series. And we have one of the members on the line. In fact, I just spoke to him the other day. It's the Hitman, Mike Eastler. Mike, how are you?
Fine. How you doing, Joe? Everything is good. How you feel, sir?
We feel great right here. I'm here with Ron Cook, who covered your team a long time ago, and we got a lot to talk about. You guys are getting back together, and I've been saying and writing and everything else that I think a guy like you really epitomized that team, Mike, because you only had 54 at-bats, but you made the most of them. You had a couple huge pinch-hit home runs, and there were a lot of guys on that team who could have played more elsewhere, but they accepted their roles and they delivered. Do you think that in many ways was sort of the story of your team?
Oh, there's no doubt, no doubt. Chuck Tanner put together, it's like a puzzle. He put together pieces that he knew that would help win the, especially down the stretch. He just put everybody together, pinch hitter, pinch runner, defense guys, guys to come in. Like, I think during that same season, John Milner pinch hit against left-hander Tug McGraw and hit a grand slam off of him against Philly. I mean, that's the kind of intuition Chuck had, and Chuck was just a master at putting together, you know, a winning combination.
Mike, if I remember correctly, I mean, that wasn't an easy team to manage. There were a lot of personalities in there, a lot of egos. Did Chuck have the perfect demeanor to handle that part of it, not just the baseball strategy, but dealing with you guys as individuals?
Trust me, Chuck had the personality and the demeanor to deal with it. Nobody messed with Chuck. Nobody messed with Chuck. Chuck's word was gospel. I mean, when he said to do something, you did it, period. If not, you'll be in his office against the wall, up in the air. He'll tell you, I'm the manager.
Mike, the other guy who led the way was Willie Stargell, and you really, I thought, just said something profound, a couple things about what Willie meant to you when we spoke the other day. Can you tell people what the late, great Pop Stargell meant to you?
You know, Willie was my everything. Willie was my everything. I really feel Willie had I think he had something behind getting me here. I met him in 1976 in Florida when we had a lockout. Willie kind of took me under his wing quietly. I didn't know it, but I knew it. We just had a personal attraction, and I just hovered over him, stood next to him, asked him many questions, took batting practice with him, just asked him. He was like my father figure, my mentor, my everything. Everything I think and everything I do in baseball from that day, you know what I mean, from 79 all the way to now, Willie's always in the back of my mind. Willie always said, umpire said, play ball, not work ball. He had fun. He enjoyed himself. He knew how to talk to reporters. He knew how to handle the public. And most of all, he knew how to handle himself on the field, win or lose. Willie was a 100% winner and a great, great, great role model for me.
You played with Dave Parker, Mike. Have you ever seen a guy hit the ball harder than he did during those couple years in the late 70s?
Let me tell you, David G. Parker was one of the greatest all-around athletes I ever played with, period, bar none. I was liking all of him, watching him play day in and day out. And in the 1981 All-Star game, when we both made the All-Star team, and I had to replace him in right, I said, yeah, right, I'm replacing Dave Parker, no way. But Dave Parker was just a great guy, a great human being, and I just loved watching him compete day in and day out. And I've always said Dave Parker was like the Willie. I mean, he was like the Muhammad Ali of baseball at the time. He talked a lot of stuff before he backed every bit of it up.
We're talking to the Hitman, Mike Eastler, of the 79 Pirates, and he went on to have a really, really good major league career, batted .293 in his career, .338, by the way, in 1980. And, Mike, when I look at that team, it had to have been one of the great platoons, if you want to call it that, a rotation of all time in left field. It was Bill Robinson, Lee Lacy, John Milner, and even you snuck in there for a couple starts in left field. How did you guys – was there also a rivalry, or how did it remain peaceful?
You know, it really wasn't a rivalry. Everybody knew their talents. Everybody knew, you know, they knew what they can do. They handled like Bill Robinson could handle, say, Steve Carlton or some of the tough lefties in the league, you know. And then John Milner could handle, you know, he could play left field and first base. And, you know, Lee Lacy could play almost everywhere, you know. I mean, myself, I was just, you know, that was my first year with the Pirates, so I didn't get a lot of playing time. But, you know, in 1980 is when I really got my shot, and that's when I, you know, took over left field. But, you know, we knew what Chet expected. We knew what he wanted. We prepared in batting practice. Bob Skinner got us ready. You know, mentally we knew what we had to do, and we had a great coaching staff, Bob Skinner and, you know, and Al Monchek and, you know, Joe Lynette. We just had guys that let us know what was going on. The communication was excellent with the ball club.
Mike, too many of you guys have passed along way too early, and you mentioned Bill Robinson, who's one of the sweetest guys I think I've ever been around, and Bibby. And one that stands out to me was Keeson. I hear you guys tell stories about Keeson every time you get together. You talk about a guy that had no fear, right?
Oh, yeah. Let me tell you something. Bruce Keeson was one of the most fierce competitors out there. He wasn't the biggest guy out there, but, boy, he had the biggest heart. He did not care. He'd go in the war, boy. I mean, and that's the thing about our club. We were just like a group of warriors. Everybody had a different competitive spirit about them, and we all knew we were what you call a bucko, you know. When you're a bucko and you wear the black and gold, you play the game the way it's supposed to be played, you know. And, you know, and people don't realize, you know, Keeson, it's not that he just gained respect on the mound. I mean, I could say it that way. He can gain respect. John Candelari the same way. You know, they say if you hit one of our guys, we're going to hit three of their guys. You know what I mean? We're going to have respect out there. So we didn't really worry about guys throwing at us. But we had our pitchers, Keeson, Candelaria, you know, and Bibby and stuff. They pick us up and they protect their hitters.
I'm kind of fascinated, Mike, with the Jim Bibby story. Teak was telling me the other day that when they brought in Bibby, the thought was he's going to be our closer, you know, a power pitcher like Gossage had just been for the Pirates. And Teak was going to be the setup guy. And it never worked out that way. And then all of a sudden, Bibby put it together in 79. And he's the guy that picked up the ball in Game 7 and delivered not many innings, but delivered a winning performance. And, of course, he has now passed on. What kind of guy was he?
Bibby was a quiet giant. He was a quiet giant. He didn't say a lot. He didn't say much. But he was a fun-loving guy. If you knew him behind the scenes, he talked a lot of wop-wop. You know, he kept everybody loose for him. But when he got on the mound, he was all business. You know, no one sweated more than Bibby. Bibby had to go through two or three hats when he was on the mound. And when every pitch he threw, it's like he gave everything that he had. He was just a winner and a warrior. And Bibby was kind of big, too, so nobody really fooled with him.
Mike, I was on the plane coming back from Baltimore with you guys, and if you'd have told me then it would be 40 years later and the Pirates still wouldn't have won another World Series, I don't know that I would have believed it. Do you follow the team now? Or are you kind of saddened about what's happened since you guys won in 79?
You know, I follow the team off and on. You know, I don't follow it as, you know, as hard as I, you know, I mean, as, you know, like day in and day out. Once a ball player retires, I think he's kind of in a different mindset as far as, you know, watching baseball. We watch the game. We watch certain players. We watch certain guys that get performing. I watch the hitters because I'm always studying hitting, you know. But as far as winning, I thought they were going to win with Bobby Bonilla and, and Bonds and stuff. They had a great ball club back in that era. It's hard to put – people don't realize it's hard to win a World Series. And winning back-to-back, et cetera, like that is very difficult. So – but I do watch the ball club, and I know Clint Hurdle is a great manager. You know, the thing about it is just a matter of people staying healthy. And, you know, when it gets down to it, brass next is pitching. Pitching and defense that wins titles.
Talking to Mike Easler for a few more minutes here, member of the 79 Pirates. All right, Mike, if I took the hitman from 1980 when he hit 338 with a 978 OPS, or maybe 84 with the Red Sox when he had 27 home runs and a 313 average, and put him into today's game, he'd be making some money. Have you ever thought of that? What kind of money you might have made?
You know, you think about that as a player, but it doesn't bother you. You know, that's just the way it is. We had a strong union. You know, we went on strike back in the days, you know, to get these guys, you know, some leverage, you know, to handle their talent. And you know, get what they're due and what they're paid for. No, we don't think about it. I mean, I had great numbers. Parker had great numbers. I mean, you go through Dawson, you go all the Hall of Fame guys that we played with, guys before us. You know, they would be, they'd be breaking the bank right now. But, you know, you don't think about that. You're happy for the guys. You're happy for the game of baseball. These guys are coming to big leagues younger. They're stronger. They're more athletic because I think they spend the whole year, you know, in nutrition and then, you know, in weight room. We didn't do that. We went home and got jobs. We went home and played winter ball. Like I played 10 years of winter baseball. We were just a different breed, you know. It's a different game nowadays. So I'm really happy for the guys. I'm really happy for the game of baseball.
Mike, you see these home runs going 450 feet, 460, 470. Would you like to hit those juiced-up baseballs they're using now?
You know, I had a conversation with a few ball players. You know, we talk off and on the phone, and I'm doing some work with Mo Vaughn and Boca Raton at his baseball academy. And I think the ball is a little tighter than it normally is. It's a little tighter. Them balls that shoot out the ballpark, I mean, and they sound different. I mean, even if on TV you can hear it. I mean, the ball is just clock. You know, I don't know if it's the bats, it's the ball. I know the guys are stronger, but some of these home runs are going pretty far, and they go on the opposite field. But I look at the mechanics of the swing, and a lot of these guys who are hitting the home run, majority of them are fundamentally mechanically sound. They're using their legs, they're using their hands, they got a tremendous follow-through, you know, and it's funny. They talk about this launch angle. Hell, I've been doing a launch angle for forever. But when he started doing a launch angle forever, there's no launch angle. The launch angle is after contact. And I look at the high finish that they're having, and I've been teaching that from the beginning. Once I started coaching in the big leagues, the high finish. You know, I had a chance to work in St. Louis as a hitting coach with Mark McGuire, and shit, he's been finishing high forever, you know. Jose Canseco, them guys were, I know they're, you know, there's a little controversy there, but I'm looking at the mechanics of the swing, not what's going on inside the body.
Mike, what are you doing these days?
I'm in Las Vegas. I do a lot of private instructions. I'm retired, basically. My last job is with the Mets. I hurt my back when I was with the Mets organization, so that I probably would be the hitting coach in New York right now if I didn't hurt my back. And I travel around and I do clinics. And right now, as I said, I'm about to go to Boca Raton to do some work with the Mo Vaughn Baseball Academy in Boca Raton.
Now, you're coming back for this weekend stuff, right?
Oh, yeah. I'll be back. Well, I'm here now, actually.
What are you – I mean, I can only imagine the tales that are told when you guys all get together. What are you looking forward to most?
Just talking, seeing the guys' faces, just talking to the guys. And I'm always bringing up a lot of controversy. I jab guys. I get guys to laugh and have fun, and that's the way I was when I played. I just love these guys, and we're like a kindred spirit, and we just get together and just enjoy each other and go back over games, situations, things, dumb things that we did on the plane, dumb things we've done, you know, going to a series or in a series or a fight during a game that we had, you know, whatever. We just talk all kind of crazy baseball talk, but it's a whole lot of fun being around the former Buccos.
Mike Eastler, we'll let you out here on this one, Mike. We're about to have a conversation on the Hall of Fame enshrinement this weekend. And there's always talk, should Barry Bonds be in? Should Roger Clemens be in? You just said you worked with McGuire. Should those guys be in the Hall of Fame?
I think they should be based on their talent and what they did early in their career. And if they did anything that they should not have done, that's something that I'm sure that they're, you know, a lot of things they've done. You know, people don't realize, but a lot of things with the steroid era, it was about injuries. It was about getting back on the field. So they took some supplements, I believe, that would aid them in getting back on the field. Mark McGuire, people don't realize how bad he messed his ankle up when he was with Oakland, and he could not even walk. And he played to the day I coached him, he had a harness on his ankle to keep his ankle in place. And I believe when they did that, they felt a different surge of energy. So they figured if it's keeping me on the field, keep me healthy, I'll continue to do whatever I'm doing. And I'm sure they was under doctor's care when they done it. But, you know, I think that their talent, Pete Rose the same way. I think these guys, people don't realize how hard it is to hit the baseball on a daily basis. You know, Ted Williams said, you know, the hardest thing to do in sports is hit a round object with a round, you know, hitting a round ball coming at such a high velocity of speed and changing. So I believe you guys should be in the Hall of Fame. I'm just a believer in, I love baseball, and I love baseball players who perform at the highest level. I think they should be in the Hall of Fame, but that's just my thought based on their, you know, their numbers and their talent.
Mike, it was a pleasure to watch you all those years. Like I told you the other day, your stance, we used to recreate in wiffle ball. The crouch stance was unbelievable. You guys all had great stances. You had Willie with the windmill and Parker with the cobra stance. It was awesome.
I know. It was great. You know, right now my back is paying for that stance now, too. I can feel that back. Oh, boy. I didn't realize I was in such a crouch. I look at some of my old friends and I said, wow, I can't believe I hit that low and come out of it. Bam. But I was like, I can think about it now. I just like to see the ball, and I try to destroy a baseball when I hit it.
You know, let me ask you one more thing, Mike, before you go. The trade that brought over Madlock and the one that brought over Foley, kind of the final two pieces for that team. I was just looking back again. Madlock's on Twitter now. We've exchanged a couple notes. He won 4 batting titles. They say he could wake up in January and in the middle of a dead sleep, 20 degrees outside, he'd hit 3 line drives for hits.
Let me tell you something. Mad Dog could hit a baseball. He was so fundamentally sound. He hit the ball. He had no fear at home plate. He read the ball. He saw the ball. He hit the ball to right field. He hit the ball to left field. And when he had to go deep, he can go deep. Matter of fact, a lot of times I look at Madlock's stance and the way he hit. If you flip it around, it looked very similar to my stance. I mean, just think about it. Try that one day. Look at flip Madlock around to the left side or flip me to the right side. It looked very similar. And I studied Madlock when he hit. He hardly moved. He took a real short step, but he had tremendously quick hands and a back half. You just couldn't beat him. You couldn't beat him. It's like he slowed the whole field down. So when the ball came, it looked like it was coming in slow motion, if you know what I'm talking about. And then he got the bat head to the baseball as soon, as quick as possible. He was just a hitter, pure hitter. And I can believe he won 4 batting titles.
I always believed Foley was crazy. Would you agree with that?
The thing about Timothy, I call him Timothy. The thing about Timothy, he had a nickname. You know what the nickname was?
Crazy Horse.
Crazy Horse. There you go. That speaks for itself. He was basically a very, what can I say, he had a lot of passion and desire for the game. And he wanted the game to be played right. He knew where to be. He knew the game inside and out. And he questioned about umpires. I think even him and Chuck Tanner got into it, Tom. He questioned Chuck Tanner at times. So that's just the way Timmy was. Timmy just played with a lot of passion, a lot of desire. He just did not like to lose.
Mike, great stuff. Enjoy the weekend. Sounds like you guys are going to have a lot of fun. Hard to believe it's been 40 years. Tell Candelaria I said hello, and maybe I'll run into you this weekend.
There you go. There's your buddy. I tell Juan Candelaria you said hi. Juan right. Candelaria. I tell him, hey, Joe, say hi. He's going to say, all right, guys.
See ya.
See you, Mike.
See you, guys. Take care. Bye-bye.
He's incredible, Ron.
Yeah, he was just full of life and energy. And
love
that's
the
way
guy.
He was when he was around. I mean, it just that team had such characters. And, you know, you don't realize it until maybe after the fact, like, how terrific Chuck Tanner was with that
yes.
group. It's not an easy group. It is not an easy group to manage.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.